Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, how we doing?
Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Hey guys, how are we doing? I apologize for being a few minutes late. There was a glitch, and I think it was because I messed up. So I apologize. We're running a few minutes behind because, like I said, I messed up, and we're good. We're live now. We're going. So, anyway, real quick, I've got my guests on, and they're waiting to be on. They're on hold right now, and I apologize to them as well because they tried to call in and couldn't reach me because of this. But anyway, real quick, I just wanted to say thanks to Aldo and Stephanie for doing this event last weekend to help raise money for the Lost Limbs Foundation here at Rhodes Hotel, and really appreciate the help, and you guys did a great job with the event, and they have next year set up for that, and it is November 2nd, I believe, is the date for that that's set up. More details will be coming up on that here pretty soon, so you guys keep an eye out and watch around for that. So anyway, I'm running behind on things. I don't want to keep people waiting. So my guests are Greg and Dana Newkirk from the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult. So this is going to be really cool. Can't wait to get started talking about all this stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and bring these guys on, and we'll go ahead and get started. Are you there?
Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, there you are. Guess what? I messed everything up earlier, and that's why I wasn't on, and you guys couldn't get a hold of me.
No, you're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, listen, if 3-4 minutes is late, that's nothing.
I hit some wrong buttons and just kind of threw the whole thing off, so I get people that were sending me messages like, what's going on? You're not talking. And I'm like, well, let me figure this out here real quick. So, yeah, I had to make a few phone calls, and we're good now, though. So we're on. So, I apologize to everyone listening, and I apologize to you guys for thinking, hey, what's going on?
No, it's all good. That's technology, man.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't technology on this side. It was me. It was me tonight.
Oh, I gave you
it
an
was
out.
All me. I'll
I
take
gave you
blame.
An easy out, Mike.
I'll fess up to this one, and I messed up. So yeah.
That's all right. We've
but.
All got it.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you for doing the show. I mean, you know, this was like just came up what a week and a half or so ago. We were talking. Robert and I came up and we were talking to you guys as you were setting up at Michigan Paracon, and was like, hey, should do the show. So then here we are. But this is going to be really cool because, like, you know, I mean, we've done events together, and, you know, and I've got to check things out and everything, but this is going to be kind of a cool learning experience for myself, with all this, with some of the questions and learning some more things about some of the objects and all that good stuff. So I'm glad that you guys are with us. I know you're out traveling now. You've been busy. I've been keeping up with things. And so how's everything going?
Good, man. We're.
I apologize if we sound like we're in a tin can. We are actually driving at the moment. We are literally driving home from some things with some friends of ours. So
yeah, we're.
Sorry if it sounds like we are in a spaceship.
We're on the slog from Maine right now. We're only 3 hours outside of home, so this is good. You're keeping us company on the drive, you and your listeners.
Good deal. So that will make the trip a little bit quicker, right?
Yeah, it'll be more fun.
Yeah, exactly. So as I mentioned, everyone listening, you guys to the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult. Really interesting with the stuff that you guys have, the objects that you have and some of the stories and everything, and thought it'd be really cool to get you guys on here and shed some light on some of this stuff and hit you with some different questions and see what's going on with things. And I've got to ask, do you have Billy with you?
Yeah, he's literally sitting like in the console area. He has his own seat in the van.
Awesome. That's cool. Good deal. That's awesome. So to start off, let's start in the beginning. How did you guys meet?
Oh my God, you don't have enough time for that. We'll give you the Cliff Notes version.
You're fine. We've got 54 minutes, so.
Oh, that won't cover it. I promise. Dana and I actually were mortal enemies. We hated each other back in the day. We ran rival ghost hunting websites back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And Dana had an all-girl group up in Canada, and I had an all-boy group down in Pennsylvania. And the all-girl group, the Girly Ghost Hunters, they got a TV show, and we got all butthurt about it. And we're just dumb boys about it. So we made fun of them, and then they hated us. And then one day I felt bad, so I decided I was going to apologize to Dana, and I couldn't get a hold of her. So I rented a car, I drove to Canada, and I did the creepiest thing possible. I just started asking around until I found one of them. And then we went on a ghost hunt that night, and the rest is history.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's really cool. That's the shortened version, right? So.
Yeah, that's the shortened version, you know, without all the romance. Save you the slog.
So, how did the museum get started? I mean, like, what sparked all this, and how did you guys get things going with this?
So the museum actually started by accident, really, for the most part. We were invited a few years ago to do a lecture at an event, and we didn't really have anything that we wanted to sell, and we had a table, so we thought it might be kind of fun if we brought some of the things that we had collected from our own investigations throughout the years, and it was kind of a hit, and we made kind of a decision at that point that it would be a really good idea if we kind of kept bringing these things with us, and then eventually people started to give us things, and some of our friends who are also investigators started to give us things, and it basically kind of took on a life of its own, and now we have objects from some of the most paranormally significant places in the world, like, you know, the Exorcist House and Ballista Axe Murder House and all the way up
Amityville,
exactly. And wow. We have a lot of objects that have just been given to us from people who just come up to us at events with things that they don't want anymore. So it really kind of happened by accident and then just sort of took on a life of its own.
That's awesome. That's cool. And then here we are, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Here we are.
All these years later, it just sort of has become its own sort of thing.
Yeah, it's awesome because, I mean, it's, you know, I've noticed the growth. I mean, since I met you guys, you know, there in the beginning when we met, and then getting to see like the whole new setup and everything in Michigan a couple of weeks ago, that was really cool. That's awesome. I mean, how much things have, how everything's going with you guys.
Yeah, you definitely saw us way back in the early.
Yeah, you saw us when it was like half a dozen things on a table.
Yeah, that's so
funny.
Yeah, and then here you have all this stuff. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's grown so exponentially. You know, we had to set up a post office box because people are constantly trying to send stuff to us. So it's not uncommon for, you know, once every week or two, go to the post office box and there's two or three. You know, I think the last time we went, there was a box that had a voodoo doll and another one that had a fist full of hair.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. When we were in Michigan, someone came to the event to donate an object to the museum. So it happens all the time. We really, you know, for the most part, there's usually one or two people at every event that we do that will kind of come up to us with something under their arm, and more often than not, you know, it's something that has a really interesting story attached to it. So, it's sort of just kind of taking on a life of its own.
Interesting. That's cool. So, I have to ask about the hair. Can you shed some light on the hair there?
The hair is relatively new, so even we don't really know all of that much about it yet, but it was from a woman who cut it off in the 30s. In the 30s, it was really a popular time period to have very short bob haircuts, and apparently she cut her hair off, and it was cursed or something. It was something along the lines of that.
Something about... The note that came with it said something about how she, and again, I apologize if I'm screwing the details up,
because
it's very new.
It is really new.
The note said something about how she, her hair, and then I think she committed suicide. Something like that. And then because of that, the people who wound up with the lock of hair believed that it was cursed. So, yeah, we still have some investigating to do on that one. But yeah, people send us hair. They send us hair. They send us weird masks that are covered in human poop.
Really?
I mean, a friend of ours. Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Our biggest rule.
What's a good one?
Is that everything?
this mask with poop on it.
Yeah, everything in the museum's donated. So. Again, people bring us things at events, they'll contact us, and we'll meet them, and or sometimes, in this case specifically, they're donated anonymously to our P.O. box. So it's not uncommon for us to kind of go to our P.O. box and find boxes of objects. And one specific object, it was a little over a year ago, a box in our P.O., and we opened it up, and inside of it was one little cue card that said, "I'm sorry," and then there was a mask inside of it that was covered in human poop.
Wow. Okay.
I told Dana, I was like, somebody did it. Somebody finally sent us a turd. Because I swore that's what it was. But no, it was a weird, like, a South Pacific mask or something that... has a weird symbol carved on the back of it.
It's since been cleaned quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Yeah. No one's gotten pink eye from wearing it,
no.
So we must have done a decent job.
Yeah, sounds like it, yeah. So that's interesting. I mean, to say the least, it's interesting. I can only imagine. I mean, after hearing hair and then the poop thing, and you probably... have no idea what to expect that might be popping up tomorrow, right?
Well, we always wear gloves when we open the boxes from then on.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So now, like, I know you guys have things, you know, you got the signs and stuff up, so what kind of, like, I know you have certain procedures with maybe certain objects and stuff, and why do you have some of the rules that you have set in place? Like, I know some of the stuff, you know, that you people shouldn't touch.
Yeah, so, when we first receive an object, we kind of have a checklist that it will go through initially, and that's basically just for our own documentation. From that point on, you know, when we first receive objects, again, it's kind of like chapter one, and that's when our investigation starts, because, again, we're continuing to investigate everything that we've been given. So during the process of our investigation, sometimes we'll find out things about the objects that maybe the people who donated them didn't know, and that can put them in a category where we would feel uncomfortable with having people handle them. And then the other aspect of it is that sometimes we receive objects that we absolutely would never bring with us into the general public just for the general public safety, because they're just not anything that we would want anyone interacting with. So it's kind of a process, really. And it's a process that kind of gets applied to every single thing that we have, because we've got to be safe and make sure that what we're bringing with us is safe. So it's kind of, we're constantly investigating all of the objects. It's kind of never ending, really, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, there have been objects that we've had that used to be, we were fine with people touching, and then one thing goes wrong, and it immediately goes on the list where we don't let people handle it anymore. You know, we've had that happen with a sword, and we thought the sword was fine until a girl picked it up at the Stanley Hotel, and our eyes rolled up in the back of her head, and then she started pointing it at people and disassociated from her body and was muttering things about needing to spill blood. Dana had to actually take her outside and pry her hands off of it, and she didn't remember any of it. So after that, we thought, well, maybe people shouldn't be handling that sword.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, definitely. So
I mean, it's a sword, so people probably shouldn't be handling it in a large group of people anyway.
Probably good, yeah.
Possession
or not.
You know, I mentioned Billy there in the beginning. Do you want to talk a little bit about Billy and kind of fill people in on that? Because they're probably like, who's Billy? And, you know, so anybody that's wondering that might not know.
Billy's a small man who travels with us everywhere.
I know.
It's actually kind of the truth. Billy, so originally we called him the Idol of Nightmares. That was the name we gave him because he's an African statue, maybe 2-3 feet tall. Was found under a house just outside of Dayton, Ohio. And the guy who found him, you know, he's wrapped in burlap and twine. And after he cut it open, he and his family started to experience terrible nightmares, really vivid, horrible nightmares. And the nightmares were typically accompanied by poltergeist activity. So doors were slamming and faucets were turning on and off and stuff like that. And he was so afraid of what was going on, he just knew in his heart that it had to do with the statue. So he contacted us and we met up with him and we started experiencing weird stuff with the statue.
One of the things that happened kind of right out of the gate was we had a lot of car issues, and Billy had been the newest object that had been introduced to the museum, so we knew at that time that it definitely had been associated with him. So one of the things that we did, we reached out to a voodoo practitioner who kind of gave us a suggestion to maybe give him some rum and tobacco. And rum and tobacco traditionally is an offering spirit. It's not that Billy isn't necessarily have anything to do with voodoo, but it was, you know, we were sort of in a position where we're like, we got to try anything. So we gave it a shot and it worked. And we didn't have any kind of car issues at all with them afterwards.
Yeah, but it got weirder after that because the car issues stopped, but then I started having nightmares. And they were always the same. Mm-hmm. It was always in a place that had to do with travel. Planes, airports, bus stations, train depots, and I would get the feeling that somebody was staring at me. Everybody kind of knows that feeling where you feel the hair on your neck stand up, and I would get that feeling, and I'd look around until I saw this little man, usually, you know, maybe 4 feet tall, 3 feet tall, standing kind of behind somebody, and I knew who it was immediately because he had jet black skin and had a burlap shawl wrapped around him. And he always gave, and he never spoke, but it was always this look that was like, okay, I see you, you see me, we have an understanding. Mm-hmm. And that always really freaked me out. And I tried not to think too hard about it, but it was a recurring nightmare. It happened all the time. And that continued until Billy started to speak. And we would do EVP sessions, and he would say full sentences. You know, he would remember people's names. Sometimes he would even make jokes. And it was to the point where it was very clear there was a personality there. It's evolved from that point on now that, you know, we have a relationship of some kind with whoever is attached to Billy. And the things we've noticed have been profound. People have, they started to give Billy things. So they would bring him gifts. Sometimes they made sense to us. They were rum or tobacco, cigarettes, coffee. Mm-hmm. We'd bring them coffee. And strange things started to happen after they would do this. One perfect example is we were on Mackinac Island. It was in October. On an island in the middle of one of the Great Lakes. And it's fall, and a woman brings Billy some coffee because he said he wanted some coffee in an EVP session the night before. And then she says, "Do you mind if I draw him? I'm a tattoo artist." And we said, "Yeah, absolutely." So she sits Billy down in another room and puts him on a chair, and then she starts to sketch. And she's sketching this beautiful, beautiful portrait of him. And as she's doing this, a snake slithered into the room and coiled up right underneath Billy. Now, again, this is on an island on the second floor of a building in October, the middle of October. There should have been no snakes here. And this happened, and the woman started to cry because everybody else is shrieking and screaming and freaking out, but she starts to cry because snakes are incredibly symbolic to her, and she felt like Billy was saying thank you. And stuff like that has happened consistently to the point where we knew there was something more to Billy. October of last year, we were at Paracon in Chicago, and we noticed that there's an archaeologist there. And so we bring him over to the table, and we start talking to him, and he says, "Well, I work for the Field Museum. My forte is really Native American archaeology, but I do have a friend who works in Africa. Let me take some pictures, and I'll see if I can find out more about him." A week later, we get an email back from this guy who says, "Oh, yeah, Billy's from the Congo. He's probably about 200, 250 years old. He's a Kisi figure. He belongs probably to a healer or a shaman." And immediately it opened the floodgates, and we realized everything Billy was doing, whether it was people who believed that they were, saved from a car accident, or people who asked him for help with something and then received that help, or healing, or whatever, he was doing exactly the same things that he was doing 200 years before for a tribe in Africa, in the Congo.
Wow.
He just took on that same role again. And so we've just let that play out, and he continues to do that, and we just care for him. That's really it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah, I wanted everybody to know what we were talking about when I said that, because I kind of just asked if Billy's with you, and then we just kind of ventured in. The show. Everybody's probably like, "Wait, who's Billy?" Yeah.
Well, I
yeah, we need to cover
that. The reason we call him Billy is because he's an idol.
Billy Idol.
Yeah. Billy the Idol, yeah. That's perfect. That's it, yeah. I've got this next question I had for you. You might have already answered it. I was going to go with what was the strangest thing that you guys have received? But you've already gave me two, so I don't know if you can top that. Can you top that?
Oh, man. What's stranger than a mask of poop or an African healing statue? I mean, there's we've gotten curses in the mail. We've gotten... people have sent us curses that they found while geocaching. People have sent us radios that they believe they can hear dead people talking through.
Paintings.
We just got one of Ed Warren's paintings in the museum collection, which is just unbelievable to me. And that apparently is haunted as well. So, yeah, it's all kinds of crazy stuff all the time.
Anything have you gotten anything that you're just like, this is just going to stay out of the public eye, period, no question?
Oh.
Something that you're just like, this isn't going to go anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have quite a few of those types of objects. And they're ones that just, again, for the most part, for the safety of the general public, we just choose not to bring them with us. One of them that, popped into my head instantly is a book that we received last year from someone who to believe that the book can cause miscarriages in pregnant women. And so, like, for example, that would be obviously something that we would never, ever bring with us into the general public. The book has in the past given, you know, a woman a miscarriage, and the donors, like, truly believe that there is some sort of curse attached to it, and that it really affects women who are pregnant. So, again, that's, you know, something that we wouldn't ever want to risk, you know, having in public.
Yeah. And there are other items, too, that, you know, there's real trauma attached to them. And so, you know, we do have a few that we will bring out occasionally if we're doing a volatile artifacts exhibition, but they, you know, they carry trigger warnings because they really do have a lot of trauma. There are, you know, we have some dolls that came from a child welfare office that was being haunted by what they thought was a poltergeist, and they traced it back to these dolls, and they are forensic dolls. So they are anatomically correct dolls that would be used in court cases for like child molestation cases. So you can imagine 50 years of trauma just constantly put into these dolls. It's a really sensitive thing. And,
we have, you know, that's a good example. We also have objects that people have donated to us, and their experiences have been very traumatic and with the object specifically. So, you know, that's another kind of example of, you know, not wanting to bring them to the general public.
Right. And things that people have requested, we don't display. Something that they just really need away from them and kept safe. So there's stuff like that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, definitely. That's good that you guys get items like that, and you know, it's really cool. You know, I mean, I figured you guys did a lot of research and put a lot of time into you know, researching every item that gets in your possession, and I can imagine. I mean, the time and the work that you guys have to put into that. You know, I've thought about it before, but I mean, like, after really talking to you guys, because usually when we see each other, it's kind of brief. Hey, how you been? And all that stuff, you know, and we don't really get to sit down and spend a lot of time to talk about this stuff. And, but yeah, I mean, after talking to you like now, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot that you guys do, I mean, with these things before you even take them out to do, you know, the conventions and stuff to even show them.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one of the coolest parts, I think, about being a curator of objects and a caretaker of objects is really when we receive them, that's like I had mentioned earlier, that's kind of like chapter one, because at that point, we really do begin the secret project on each one of them. And I mean, that research is sort of a dedication for each one of those objects to try to find out why the activity that's happening around them is happening, so that if there's something that we can do to help, we can. So, you know, like, for instance, with Billy, when we first received him, he was kind of scary, and he scared a lot of people, but if we hadn't had continued doing as much investigating with him and research into what exactly he was, we never would have come to the conclusion, and we wouldn't know what we know about him now. So we kind of approach all of the objects in the museum with that same kind of dedication.
Yeah, no matter how scary they might seem, you know, our job, there's a lot of curators who really just, you know, it's shock value.
Yeah.
And they just want something scary to put under glass, and that's really not what we do. You know, we even correct people when they say, you know, you must, it must be cool to own these things. We're like, well, we don't own them. We just care for them.
Yeah, we're really caretakers.
You know, a lot of these things, I really do honestly, truly believe, come to us for a reason. Because we're just as interested in helping whatever it is that's attached to it and understanding whatever it is that's attached to it and preserving it as we are, you know, the clients that we get who have things they need removed or taken care of or understood.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of attachments, you guys did Kindred Spirits with Amy and Adam, and I remember, like, from that episode, when you guys were talking to them, then they were hearing like this knocking. I mean, you're talking about objects, and then they're hearing like this knocking sound or whatever in the background, and they go back and they find out it's like the bells that, what was it, like the grandmother had or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of odd, you know, that at that time when you guys are talking about objects, and then this happens in the background.
But I mean, that's how it works,
yeah,
right?
The cool thing about it too is in that case, they were bells that their grandmother had actually made, so they were extra special, and you know, she was using those objects to send a sign to her family that she was sort of still around and letting them know that she, you know, she would pop in from time to time to see how they were doing.
Yeah, that's cool. I did. To bring that up and mention that as well, because I mean that was cool with you guys talking about the objects, and then you know that happens in the background at that same moment. You know, I mean it's interesting. You know, and you guys have done. You guys, I mean this episode is like all over the place because you know we're talking about this, and then you know now we're kind of going into the paranormal stuff, and then you guys did Finding Bigfoot as well.
Yeah.
And how was that experience?
Oh my gosh, it was one of our favorites. It was fun. We the producers contacted us because they were doing an episode that had to do with the paranormal and kind of looking at Bigfoot from a paranormal perspective, which isn't really what Finding Bigfoot has done in the past. They're very much a flesh and blood, you know, he's a flesh and blood creature kind of group of people.
The cast wanted nothing to do with it.
No.
In other words,
they
refused
want to touch
any of the paranormal sightings.
Yeah.
So they had to construct a team.
Basically, when the producers contacted us, you're going to get to torture the cast of Finding Bigfoot for 2 weeks with all of your weird theories about what Bigfoot is. And we were like, yes, that sounds fantastic. Absolutely.
It was great, and you know, it's funny because I feel like Finding Bigfoot gets ragged on a lot, and you never really know what it's like, you know. We always try and take everything with a grain of salt, but Finding Bigfoot gets ragged on a lot because they, you know,
they don't find Bigfoot
and yada yada, but that's how you know the show is real.
I mean,
we've been on the set of a lot of different television shows, and you know, there's a certain level of production that goes into these things. But I could not believe when we did Finding Bigfoot, it's literally you, a producer, a camera guy, a sound guy, they drop you off in the forest at night, and then they say, go find Bigfoot. And you're like, you don't want any direction? They're like, nope, do your thing. And they let you go. And so all night long, you are out just looking for Bigfoot. Which is how you know that you know they're the real deal. They really try and make it as realistic as possible, which is why they don't find him very often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And speaking of like, you know, in talking about the whole Bigfoot thing, I mean, you guys are gonna be at CryptidCon in Frankfort, Kentucky, this weekend, which is I'll be there as well. So we'll hopefully get some time to hang out, but. So plugging that you guys will be there this weekend. So anybody that's in that area, get tickets and go and check out all these items and stuff that they have. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, and I'm sure that they're finding it interesting just from the conversation that's going on here. But this is something that we were talking about before. This has been a little while, but. The whole Bigfoot being a ghost theory, let's touch base on that.
So that's why they wanted us on the episode of Finding Bigfoot, is because we had a theory that I really do believe. I think Bigfoot, for the most part, most of the sightings of Bigfoot, I really think are ghosts, which is, I mean, it answers so many of the problems that we have with Bigfoot, because we know Bigfoot leaves evidence behind. But only a specific kind of evidence. You know, people they found Bigfoot poop and hair, so they said, but it's never conclusive. Sometimes it comes back, you know, as a bear. But the footprints are very hard to explain. The sightings and the photographs are very hard to explain.
One of the things that happened when we were in Mount Shasta, which is where we filmed the episode of Finding Bigfoot, was one night we were out investigating, and out of nowhere, all of our camera equipment, a lot of our batteries got drained, like completely drained. And production company, the producers and the cast were kind of like, you know, this happens a lot, but it we don't really have an explanation for it. And it was kind of cool because Greg and I, with like, the background as, you know, paranormal investigators, we could kind of go, oh, we know what that is. That happens to paranormal investigators all the time.
Yes, ghost hunters experience their batteries drain and their camera equipment doesn't work all the time. Electromagnetic interference. Bigfoot hunters experience that stuff all the time, but they don't have the context that we do
as paranormal investigators. Yeah.
And I mean, there's even there's people who believe that they've been hypnotized by Bigfoot, or they've seen strange lights around Bigfoot sightings, or my favorite are the Bigfoots that can be invisible and pound on the wall. Like that's poltergeist activity. That's what these people are experiencing. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the paranormal investigator's lens. So by applying that to Bigfoot sightings, you immediately go, oh, well, one of the oldest tricks in the ghost hunting book is to put baby powder down on the floor and wait for the footprints to show up. So we know ghostly footprints. So why wouldn't the ghost of some large prehistoric creature be able to leave physical footprints in the mud? I mean, ghosts probably do that all the time, but we don't pay attention to it because they look just like regular old human footprints. But if it was the ghost of something big, something that doesn't exist anymore, you will take notice. So I think that a lot of what people are seeing is a ghost, if not something like a thought form or a tulpa that's been, you know, projected into reality by a million people focusing on the idea of Bigfoot, which, I mean, frankly, is probably the most popular cryptozoological monster. I mean, to the point where, you know, we just passed a bunch of cars on the highway today that are the camper van called Bigfoot, and they have a Bigfoot logo.
Yeah, Bigfoot is a pop culture phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting hearing, like, all that stuff because, I mean, just as you said, I mean, people don't really think about, you know, that possibility. I mean, it's, you know, they think, you know, well, we're going to run out and maybe find this, you know, out in the woods or in a cave somewhere or something, and you don't. You don't think about the other possibilities, like what you're talking about with that, you know, maybe, and it would make sense. I mean, with the battery draining and stuff like that, you know, things like that that happen. I mean, it's really interesting to hear, like, you know, your guys' thoughts on this stuff. I mean, it's fascinating. I love it, you know, and I enjoy getting to talk to you guys, you know, all the time. So.
I think one of the biggest problems that you have in any fringe community is people tend to clump together. Investigators of weirdness clump together, and then they don't really cross-contaminate. So Bigfoot hunters, they don't talk to ghost hunters and quite often scoff at ghost hunters. And ghost hunters typically don't really talk to UFO investigators and vice versa. And if they really, if they shared information more and were more open to other theories, they'd probably find there is so much crossover, it's undeniable that a lot of this phenomena is coming from the same place. People are just looking at it through different lenses. But I think part of that is it's always nice to have somebody who's crazier than you. So you can look for Bigfoot in the woods, but hey, at least you're not some nut who thinks they got abducted by aliens, you know? It's always nice to have somebody, you know, the crap can roll downhill to. And it's... I think Bigfoot hunters are particularly adverse to the paranormal stuff.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, too, is a lot of Bigfoot sightings that kind of have that paranormal element to it, a lot of Bigfoot investigators, if, again, they're those, like, very kind of tried-and-true, flesh-to-blood, Bigfoot, you know, unidentified primate kind of investigator, they'll often throw the other cases out because they won't kind of fall into their criteria. So there's a lot of instances when you look into Bigfoot investigation, and when you look into Bigfoot sightings, there are a lot of cases of people legitimately experiencing some interesting stuff, like Greg had mentioned, you know, like Bigfoot being invisible or disappearing in front of their eyes, or, you know, they'll be tracking a set of footprints and suddenly they'll disappear out of the middle of nowhere. So those types of kind of important details that maybe a paranormal investigator might perk up to, because we're, again, have that lens. We're tuned to look for things like that. A Bigfoot investigator might just think that, you know, they're crazy, or they're details that don't really matter. So we're kind of always trying to tell people to talk to other investigators, talk to people who...
Yeah, find the weirdest person you know,
yeah,
and listen to them.
Be open to kind of sharing theories and ideas with people who maybe aren't doing the same kind of stuff as you, but that you can learn from.
So real quick on top of that, one of my favorite stories that speaks to that weird divide is we were at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference a couple years ago, which is a fantastic conference. If your listeners have never been, you should absolutely go. It's unbelievable, the job they do. We went to this, and we didn't tell anybody who we were. Some people recognized us from Finding Bigfoot. But there was a guy who, he was talking to us, and, you know, he was telling us about his theories. And I was like, well, you know, our theories are a little bit different. He's like, well, what do you mean? I was like, oh, I think Bigfoot's a ghost. And he scoffed, and he said, oh, I don't believe in any of that woo-woo junk. And then he proceeded to show us the best way to bang on a tree to talk to the man monkey that no one can find. So a little self-awareness goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to go to that sometime. That'd be cool. Like, you have to let me know when that's going on next year, and maybe I can try to make that, and that would be cool.
Yeah,
to check out.
Great.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. So another thing, this is something I want to touch base on too. Since we're kind of all over the place, I kind of wanted to just lean into like talking about UFOs and stuff a little bit too. Are you guys? What all, you know, are you involved in anything like UFO-wise with any of the research and stuff in there? This is something that I had no idea, so this is kind of coming from me, you know, in a sense, and then, like, everybody else is going to hear at the same time, too, that might not know either.
Yeah, we investigate UFO sightings. You know, we're particularly interested in the alien abduction phenomena. We've done a lot of research and experimentation on that. Hung out with a lot of UFO abductees. They prefer to be called experiencers.
Experiencers, yeah.
But
one of my favorite experiences that we had happened actually with John Tenney, with our friend John Tenney, everyone's friend John Tenney. About 2.5 years ago, we thought it might be interesting to interview an abductee who had been having UFO experiences or kind of alien abduction experiences since he was a baby. And we brought him to the site of one of his very first abductions. And we were standing in a field. It was a really large field kind of in the middle of nowhere, and we were interviewing him. So we had camera equipment, and we had a tarp down.
This was the first time he'd been back to this abduction spot since he was a teenager.
Yeah, so we were the three of us were with him in this field interviewing him, and we started noticing that it sounded like rain was coming in, and, you know, we had all this camera equipment with us, and we were worried that maybe it would kind of get ruined, so we were sort of all trying to figure out how we could get everything back in the car as quickly as possible, even though we had a pretty decent dash across the field to get back to our cars, and the rain started coming closer and closer towards us, and then one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced in my entire life, as the rain came closer to us, we noticed that it was raining everywhere except over top of us in a circular pattern.
And the abductee was staring straight up and said, oh, yeah, they're right there.
So we were, you know, we had a rainstorm happening all around us except directly over top of us, in this circular pattern where the abductee kind of was assuring us that, yeah, they were up there. They were watching, making sure that, you know, he wasn't giving away too many secrets, or for whatever reason they're with him all the time. But it was one of the weirdest experiences that I've ever had. And I will forever remember Greg Tenney and I just kind of standing in this field looking up into the sky.
Black God.
And wondering why it wasn't raining on us. And, I mean, we were all standing on a tarp, too.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that, like, the sound of rain on a tarp is pretty pretty recognizable, and there was nothing. There was no rain, or it was unbelievable.
That's wild. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, I talked to Ben Hansen like about some of this stuff every now and then, and you know we've talked about even doing maybe a charity event at some point and just do like a watch or something sometimes. So maybe if we ever put something like that together, then maybe all of us can just get together and just do one huge event. And I think
that
would be
amazing.
Pretty cool. I think that would be awesome because I've never done it, you know, and I think it would be really cool. So maybe that's something we can set up sometime in the future and do that. That would be neat.
Do it.
And speaking of, we need to get you out here at the hotel and stuff sometime too. We'll have to do that.
God.
We've talked about that, and because you guys
are
really
we're
too
dying
far
to come
away.
No, not at all. Not at all. We're dying to come check it out.
Yeah, that'll be a fun time. Yeah, anytime you guys want to come up, we'll figure something out and we'll make it happen. I think it would be cool. I think you guys would like it. And you're really not all that far away from me, so. So
we're
another question.
We're always a fan of a short drive.
Yeah. All the traveling and stuff you guys are doing, because you've been from what I've been watching the last few days. I mean, you guys have been all over the place.
Yeah, we're on the tail end of a 16-hour slog right now.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's making your drive a little bit quicker, so I'm not seeming
it
so
is.
Bad.
Good.
So we still have a little bit of time left. Let me ask you this, and this is I'm going to ask you both this, and I'm curious if you could add one item to the museum. What would it be and why?
Oh, this is I don't think anyone has ever asked us this question.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is hard, man.
Jeez.
It's like trying to pick your
Robin.
Favorite
Robin
record all time.
Oh,
Robin.
This is a great question.
Ooh,
let me think. Ooh,
I
so hard.
Okay, I think I might know mine.
Okay.
But, of course, this could change. Like, this could change anytime. So keep thinking about yours.
Okay, I'll keep thinking about mine.
I think if I ever have the opportunity, I think it'd be awesome to add Robert the doll. I don't imagine that that'll ever happen. I'm not going to hold my breath. I hear they're very attached to him, and I'm sure that somebody else out in Las Vegas has already offered plenty of money for Robert. But... I think most people would immediately go when they're thinking of a haunted doll, maybe to Annabelle, but I think I think Robert has a much more unique, a bigger history, and I think more people have been affected by Robert. And I would really love to know why Robert does what he does. I'd love to know.
That is interesting. They've never really figured out why he is the way he is.
Yeah.
That might be kind of fascinating.
And that's kind of our forte, is figuring out why these objects are doing what they're doing. And because that's the thing with paranormal activity, typically it's happening because there's a message. And if you don't get the message, the activity will get more and more violent and aggressive. And I don't think that that's the fault of anything other than somebody yelling because you're not listening to them. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to listen to Robert. Yeah. I'd like to find out what he needs.
I think
good answer.
So mine probably would be and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but you probably will, Greg.
Yeah.
The painting.
Oh, are you talking about the hands resist him?
Yeah, the hands resist him. It's a super creepy painting that kind of has been kind of floating around the internet for years and years and years. What's the story with it again, the full story?
I don't even know the full story other than apparently it's just one day it was thrown up on eBay, claimed to be haunted.
Yeah.
The owner of it actually lives in Indiana, I believe, not too far from us.
Really?
It's this very old piece of the internet that is sort of even from back in the day when I was first building websites, I would always hear the story about this creepy painting called The Hands Resist Him, and it's If anyone Googles it,
yeah, you'll
have some nightmares.
Yeah.
It's definitely creepy.
My dad actually, when I was a kid, grounded me because I set the computer background to the hands resistance, and it freaked him out so bad he grounded me from the computer.
I had this super creepy painting of this little boy, and in the background you'll notice a window that has lots of little handprints all over it. It's just super creepy, but I don't know. I probably would want something like that just based on the fact that it's kind of one of the very first haunted objects that I ever heard about, and it kind of, I have a bit of nostalgia for it, I think.
Yeah, that's cool. Greg, you kind of seem like you were on the fence. Is there another one that was kind of coming to mind?
So there's a legendary item that you hear about sometimes, and they exist, but they're incredibly rare, and most of them are in very big, reputable museum collections. The kind of stuff where, you know, they've curated these things and spent lots of time and millions of dollars to acquire. But there's such a thing called a hand of glory.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the mummified hand of a hanged man thought to bring good luck and immortality to people. And you can find fake ones. And you can, I mean, there's gaffes of them all over the place. But I would, man, what I wouldn't do to have a real hand of glory in the museum collection. I think that would be wild.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, I had to ask because you seemed like you were kind of tossing. It was like, well, do I go with this one?
Yeah.
Do I go with that one? So I was like, I'm that curiosity got the best of me. So I'm like, what was the other one? So was there another one?
Well, then what about you, Mike? If you were opening a museum, what would be the item that you would, it would be your must have?
Yeah, I don't think I would have anything particular, but I'm fascinated with like all anything with Egypt. I wouldn't have anything specific, but yeah, I mean, yeah.
Maybe a cursed sarcophagus.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, as long as nothing bad happened to me, I think it'd be kind of cool. But you know,
all right, fair enough. That's true.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with, you know, Egyptians and mummies and stuff like that. I mean, I'd love to make a trip to Egypt sometime. So, yeah, that's one of my really big fascinations there is that. We've got a few more minutes. What time we have left here? You guys want to tell people about the memberships and stuff that you have going on for the museum and everything, that they can tell them where to go to and check that out if they want to go and sign up and join and all that, and possibly tell like whatever events and stuff that you guys have coming up.
Yeah, we have we started a really cool thing 2 years ago, where if you want to join the museum, you can actually join the museum. We have a membership program. You get a cool membership kit that has like got a special vinyl sticker for your car, and you get a membership card and pins and all kinds of cool stuff. But what it does, it gives you access to all of our evidence files, so you can see the stuff that doesn't hit the public. So whether it's an unboxing video of a brand new artifact or evidence or raw EVPs, we do live investigations and haunted places twice a month with the artifacts, and we do giveaways, all kinds of really cool stuff. It's like a big, fun, secret club, and all of it supports the work that we do with the museum and preserving the artifacts and being able to throw money in the gas tank to go pick up new ones from people who need help. But if people are curious about that, they want to learn more and kind of see what they can get, they can go to patreon.com/paramuseum. One of the really cool things that you can get with it is Dana's Magic of the Month Club.
Yeah, so one of the options that we have is once a month I put together a handcrafted goodie box full of magical awesomeness. every month I'll kind of send people crystals, candles, oils, all sorts of handmade goodies. And I teach live classes, and we do all sorts of kind of events together. So that's one example of one of the tiers that you could potentially sign up for if you were interested in becoming a museum member.
So there's that. That's one of the things that helps support what we do. But the other way you can support that is by coming to see a museum exhibition. And we're going to be everywhere from Kansas to New Hampshire to California to Hawaii from now into next year. We're actually even planning dates now into 2020. So to find those dates, you can go to paramuseum.com and just click on visit the museum, and all the dates and locations are there.
Awesome. Can you just hide me, like, in your luggage or something whenever you guys go to Hawaii? I mean,
yeah.
Not asking too much, is
there
it?
We go. No, we'll just we'll get a little name card for you for the museum,
we'll
and
say,
we'll just
haunted Mike couch.
This
you
is the haunted
hug.
Mike couch.
Yeah.
And we'll just get you in the corner.
You can hang out with Billy.
There you go.
Yeah, perfect. That sounds like a plan. We can just hang out on the beach.
Yeah,
there
we'll,
you
we'll,
go.
We'll
That'd
put you
cool.
in a burlap sack and carry you in a big chest.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really cool. I mean, this is the first chance that I've had to be able to, like, sit down and really talk to you guys about a lot of this because, you know, like what I mentioned, you know, earlier is, you know, usually we have enough time to, hey, how you been, and kind of talk, you know, before an event. And then, you know, when things take off from that, then, you know, you guys are busy and then I'm set up somewhere else, you know, like pushing the charity. And then it's kind of hard to get too much time to really, you know, spend to hang out. So this is... been really cool to get the opportunity to sit down with you guys, so I appreciate you coming on and being a part of the show and sharing all this stuff.
This has been a great time.
Yeah.
It's been good to chat, and thank you for keeping us company on our drive.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all. And I'm glad, like I said again, you know, thank you guys for coming on. We just got a couple minutes left, so I thought good time to kind of wrap up here, I guess, that way, because I first one, like I did, I kind of tend to go over, and everybody's like, oh, you just cut off, and I was like, oh, it's because I looked down and realized they're already gone, so I'm like, now I try to watch the time, you know, as we go further, I keep kind of keeping an eye on things, and, you know, that way I don't cut off, and I'm sitting here rambling and talking, and everybody's just like, what happened? Kind of like, you know, the beginning of the show when
you're
I messed up and everybody's like, what happened? He's not even there. What's that?
It's just you're just leaving them in suspense so they tune in next week.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. So, yeah. Well, I won't keep you any longer. We're about to wrap up here, and you guys be safe on the rest of your trip getting back home. And, again, thank you for being on the show. And, of course, I'll get to see you guys this weekend.
Yeah,
absolutely,
can't wait, man.
Yeah.
We'll see you soon.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Hopefully we can round up some time to hang out before everything gets started and all that. So I'll probably be down early. So.
Cool.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right,
same
well,
here.
Thank you
good,
for having
good
us
deal,
on,
so. Yeah, thanks for being on, and we'll talk to you soon then.
All right. Take care, Mike.
You too. I'll see you. Bye. All right, guys. So we're getting ready to wrap up the show. We've just got a little bit of time left. Real quick, thanks for listening. You know, thanks for Greg and Dana for being on the show. We've got a few things coming up. There's a public investigation on the 15th of September. You can go to RhodesHotel.com. And I believe we have two tickets left for that that's coming up. And all the other stuff that's coming up is at RhodesHotel.com. You can look at the events and everything going on there. And hopefully we'll see you at an event at some point. We're getting ready to add another October public investigation that I believe is going to be October 5th, I think it was, whatever that Friday is. That'll be added probably in the next day or two, and those tickets are always limited to like 10. So I'm out of time, so I'll let you go, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks, 9 p.m. Tuesday night. Thank you. Good night.